Sorry, kitchen fire.
Oh, that's a little unexpected.
I'm not even kidding, either.
So, it's like I want to know, and yet I don't want to know.
Well, you know how pigs catch fire.
Yeah, but what does your mother have to do with this?
She was the one cooking.
It was a grease fire, then.
Actually, it was, yeah, in the oven.
In your mom's oven. Too much grease in there. I set it on fire.
Yes.
From friction.
No better a fire than a bun.
Well, she's had most of the hardware that would require removed, so, you know.
Oh, there's a patch for that.
I installed plenty of hardware in your mom.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. For a nickel.
You plugged into her serial port over and over.
I use my FireWire.
Although she said the bandwidth was really low.
But you should see my upstream.
I would say that we're on fire, but that seems inappropriate given the circumstances.
3, 2, 1. And now it's time for another superhero time with your hosts, XV.
Speaking of which, your mother.
Hey, Mickey.
It's like staring into an ugly sun.
Paladin.
There's a thin line between douche and dick.
Ken.
What a good pirate.
And Fort Max.
We'll be right back.
Well, it's superhero time, and it's sort of the Halloween edition, except that the show won't be posted until November 1st, so, oops. Whatever. Spooky.
Yeah, we can have candy anyway.
Ooh, candy. Yeah, I want a box of nerds. Fort Max, jump in a box and come over here.
He's already in your mom's box.
Huh. So, yeah, we have Paladin, Mickey, and Fort Max as usual. And Ken is suffering the grueling grocery retail that is Halloween night.
Oh, not as much as he's going to be suffering soon, though. Thanksgiving is coming.
Well, yes, but that's this month's suffering, so.
Oh, it's all suffering.
Then he gets, you know, most of the following month to look forward to that suffering.
It's all suffering until you die. Then it stops.
Maybe.
Then it starts again and the cycle continues.
Yes, depending on your belief system. So, basically following on the heels of the Ultra Megaforce. Ultra Megaforce, right? Yeah.
Yes.
The super duper Ultra Megaforce. 64.
Alpha.
Turbo.
Third strike. So, apparently the so-called second season of Power Rangers Samurai is going to be rebranded as Power Rangers Super Samurai.
Because apparently they can't trademark Cyber Squad anymore.
Well, that was never their trademark to start with. That was Deke and Playmates, not Saban and Bandai. And yes, I realize I just pulled a Fort Max by trampling all over your joke with reality. I'm sorry.
That's what the rest of the world does anyway.
Why are they rebranding the show this late into it?
Well, I guess it's like the same thing that happens with Transformers. You know, they're trying to extend the line out, and part of doing that is rebranding it so that the retailers will be happy to keep carrying it.
Like how Beast Machines got renamed Battle for the Spark.
And Armada became the Unicron Battles, and so on and so forth.
And then Super Link Battles.
No, not Super Link Battles. No.
Yeah, okay, yes, but that'll happen around the halfway mark of those series.
No.
Did it not?
And more like about two-thirds.
This is 20 episodes like three, in, which fourths. Is about the halfway point for Samurai.
Yeah, Origin...
We're only halfway into Samurai? Oh, God.
Origin
exactly.
Origin 1 and 2 was episodes 19 and 20 out of a 40-episode run.
That's it? Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh.
Well, it's
exactly.
It's because they took a Young Justice break and went most of the year in reruns.
I get that because I don't watch that show.
Well, the difference is people want to see Young Justice. Or at least they should. It's pretty dang good.
People want to see Young Justice when they remember it exists. When they realize that it hasn't been canceled. Cartoon Network is horrible. But no, yeah, we're halfway through Power Rangers Samurai, technically, and instead of an actual new episode, they ran one of these three specials they have prepared for the season. Yay.
It's a remake of that Lord Zedd video.
Lord Zedd's Monster Mash?
Exactly.
Yeah. Can't believe I remember that.
I can't believe they remembered it and remade it.
So, I mean, it's kind of surprising to me that there's so much in the fall assortment of regular Power Rangers Samurai toys when the line's going to get rebranded for the spring, and then what are they going to have to fill it with?
Well,
we now know, thanks to pre-orders up on Big Bad Toy Store.
Well, we know about, like, Zord assortments and stuff. I'm thinking, like, you know, regular figures and, like, role-play toys.
Well, they could always make regular figures of the Super Mode Samurais if they introduced them to the show.
If the, well, yeah, if they use the Super Shinkanger stuff, which it looks like they're really trying to avoid.
Unless they're just trying to save it for the next assortment of toys.
Yeah, I guess. But see, it's going to be tricky either way doing that because in Shinkanger, only one of them at a time could be in Super Mode. So it's either going to be a lot of reshoots or...
They do a lot of reshoots anyway.
Or really yeah, like all the Megazord footage.
No, the Megazord footage is still original.
Well, the cockpit footage where they're in their Megazord armor.
Yeah, that's reshot. I'm surprised they don't just shoot one like generic Megazord cockpit sequence and loop it.
Well, just because they haven't yet doesn't mean they won't.
Well, they did for season 2 of Power Rangers.
They could put out the Battleize mode red in 4-inch scale.
And then Battleize everybody else who will never appear on the show.
That's and I do believe that they could, well, they probably could do regular mode of the girls, too, so.
They could also make some kind of bullshit power-ups that don't exist at all, like they've done for other lines.
Yeah.
Or maybe they'll just go out and make Vulcan Spike action figures.
And then they'll recolor the Samurai Morpher toy a couple more times. Like, they'll do a black one to be the Inramaru from Shinkanger. Which is funny because that wasn't the Shoto phone at all.
They could,
Well, neither was the...
The Sushi Changer, I know.
Right.
Gold Ranger's weapon could show up as a roleplay toy.
They could do a special gold edition of the Mega Blade. even though the one in the show is just like all the other ones.
Or they'll recolor the spin sword into the... Barracuda Blade.
That would be hilarious too.
You know what they could actually do is they could put out the belt buckle and some extra discs as a role play thing in the same assortment.
Yeah, they could.
That already exists as an American toy, so I mean.
Yeah, they just have to split it out of that dress up set.
Yeah.
With there you, yeah,
stuff
so there you go.
You might already have anyway. So
well, half the stuff that was in the dress up set was stuff you already had anyway, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Or they could re-release the RPM morphers with samurai packaging in honor of the crossover.
Put out the Jungle Fury cannon, call it the Samurai cannon.
And I'm sure they still have a stockpile of Jungle Fury microzords sitting somewhere.
And the stockpile of mix-and-morph morphers.
Yeah, there's actually pretty much, you know, go to a Ross or anything like that, and that's where
Tuesday
they all
morning.
Went. Yeah. Burks, which is a more expensive, worse quality knockoff of, like, Marshalls, if you can imagine such a thing. Just for reference, I was there today and found they had Power Core Combiner 5-packs. They were selling them for $19.99, and the sticker says, as compared to $39.99.
Good lord. Were they buying them at Kmart at that price?
No, because then they would probably be as compared to $45.99.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so anyway...
Those are KB prices.
It's KB-styled stickers, isn't it?
I wouldn't know.
So
KB closed before Formax was born.
Yeah.
No,
the first time
I've
or the second time?
I've never seen
Burks. No, but I mean, it's the same thing that KB did, putting an inflated was price on their stickers and then their... Still inflated now sale price. You know, the thing that got
them... What a great deal! I'll buy this!
You know, the thing that got them sued.
KBs around here never had those. They just had those little orange ones that just had a single price.
Because you were too young to remember the original kind of price tags. Because KB eventually did get sued for that practice and had to stop.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, new Samurai Zord pre-orders on Big Bad Toy Store.
Yes,
full of the crazies.
A deluxe Bull Megazord. A
okay.
Deluxe Gigazord.
What?
What?
Who knows?
A and a new Zord vehicle, the Lantern Spider Zord.
I don't even. What?
Now I've been
thinking. Like, Galio turned into a spider, right? I mean, I didn't see Shinkendra, but that's what I remember seeing.
Yeah, sure.
Now, could they possibly claim that the Beetle could be repainted into a spider?
Except, isn't the Lantern Spider thing sold at the small Zord price
point? It's sold as at the Zord vehicle price point.
So it wouldn't be two of them together.
Why not? It would make as much sense as anything else here.
But it wouldn't make them as much money, which is the point.
Also, the return of Ranger Heroes.
Unless it was two non-posable Zords in one package.
Which would be equally odd.
Not for Bandai so much.
Eh. And also, isn't there a listing for a battery-operated Megazord?
Yes. As well as a...
I hope it's another helicopter Zord.
No, it's the same helicopter Zord, just in Samurai packaging now.
Yeah, they took the flying Megazord and recolored it in the Samurai Megazord colors.
As well as a deluxe vehicle Lion Zord with Super Mode Red Ranger.
I guess that's one of the Super Samurai.
But not Super Human Samurai, sadly.
Too bad.
As well as a Dojo Training Center playset.
Well, that sounds like it'd be really exciting to have.
I hope it comes with a Mentor G action figure.
No, it will come with the Tau.
You know, it comes with an action figure of old New Zealand guy. So, any more toy listings for that?
Nope. Aside from, well, let's see, there are various new listings for further case assortments of the Morphin Rangers and basic figures, but those don't list anything more specific than just what the case assortment name is, so...
Well, that's boring.
Yeah.
But on the upside, Samurai isn't the only line with new merchandise this week.
Yeah, Gokai Blue came out in Figuarts.
And we saw the first images of Figuarts Skyrider.
You mean Amazon.
Well, Saban means Amazon.
He looks odd.
He looks like Skyrider.
Yeah, it looks like Skyrider's costume. Which is to say, it looks like Amazon's costume.
Who?
What?
Well, the Bandai America instructions will say Amazon.
I am Amazon!
Okay, so what else?
For us, nothing, but there is another D-Arts release that looks impressive.
Which is...
Vile from Mega Man X, if anyone else cares.
This isn't new Soundwave.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah, true. And also, apparently the figure arts Claw Scorpion sucks.
How so?
Let me get the link from the back scroll here.
Or the paint detailing is actually worse than the Combo Change series.
That's impressive.
The proportions are also a little bit wackier.
And it has less molded detailing somehow.
Looks like it has fewer moving parts, also.
Does it cost more?
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, yeah, because it comes with a little milk jug.
And a little gorilla candroid.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it does not come with the Odin cart for it to sit in the oil and throw noodles.
That'll be in the next Tamashii exclusive pack.
Yes. Well, I want Tamashii exclusive Genta's sushi stand first. Although, I guess you could use the one thing for both. Just different accessories. What?
One comes with Gorilla Candroid, the other comes with Ika-chan.
But we already have Figuarts Ika.
Yeah.
Exactly, they'll just repackage it.
Oh, okay. No, it'll come with the Daigoyo with its head popped up. Just to be bothersome. Okay, so any more stuff?
I think that's about all that matters this week.
So, did you want to talk about the costume lawsuit thing?
Nah, I don't think it's that interesting.
Surprise, someone's making money off of Saban's property without his permission? They get sued.
Well, he didn't sue Disney. Oh, wait, Disney didn't make any money off of it.
And also, he kind of sold the property to him, so...
Well, that never stopped, like, you know, Harmony Gold or anybody.
Harmony Gold is such a stripper name. She should wear one of those Power Ranger costumes.
Well, maybe she is. That is a blonde. I mean, to be Harmony Gold, you totally have to be blonde, right?
Oh, completely.
Yeah. Although, her blonde looks a little too natural. I think you need more bleachy looking to be a stripper.
Right, the carpet should not match the drapes.
Not remotely. So we were talking about something, right? Besides strippers.
No, I think we should go on with this.
Oh, is this where Brio Keggo came in again?
No, probably not.
Put in the show notes.
I think we had enough Keggo common before. Okay, so any more news?
No, but you're both starting to break up a little bit.
Well, I feel fine, but you're right about Mickey. I don't know what's up with that. Sadly, I can
blame
hear
the booze.
Sadly, I can hear Fort Max clearer than I can hear Mickey.
But he still makes less sense than I do.
Well, yeah. Even when I can't hardly hear you, I can still tell what you're trying to say.
New drinking game. Every time we complain about your sound quality, take a shot.
Right.
New drinking game. I keep drinking until it's gone.
New drinking game. Every time you take a drink, take a shot.
I like those rules.
The object of the game is to see how quickly you can kill yourself with alcohol poisoning.
As long as I die before I get old.
Too late.
Too late.
Damn it.
Okay, so this week Power Rangers Samurai had a special episode. A very special Power Rangers Samurai.
So we should have a very special person tell us about it.
But
Fort Max?
Not here.
Well, we have...
Yeah, Razor Shaw's not on this
week, Part 2, in which the defeated monsters have a party.
Sweet.
Can't be. It's Samurai.
So is this like a new footage party, or...?
New footage party.
Well, that's neat. I guess it would have been tricky for them to cut a bunch of existing footage together to make it happen. Although I'd probably have been more interested to see the attempt if they had. So...
But yes, anyway, there's a party at some weird CGI-looking house exterior, and, well...
Was it Hillhurst?
No.
Oh.
But, anyway, there's a... But anyway, yes, you have the monsters that have been blown up there and telling their stories to each other about how they almost got the Power Rangers.
Did anybody...
they throw a rock at them?
Yeah.
It was
sadly,
a big rock.
No. It needed more Killer Croc.
Did they do anything to explain like how these dead monsters were unblowed up?
Wizard did it.
No.
Okay.
But
the Force?
They're all dead.
It was the Mega Force.
Specifically mentioned that they're all dead. And why Master Zandred is upset that they were having a party without him.
Oh, just give him some of the medicine.
They did. And explaining that this was a party that they didn't want, that he didn't want to be at because they're all dead, wasn't enough of an answer.
So basically, this makes about as much sense as any given episode of Samurai.
But it had a lot less bad acting,
or at least a lot less ugly acting.
Well, it also did have probably the longest setup for a pun ever.
Longer than some of ours.
Zandred was going to be the life of that party.
Because everybody else was dead.
Yes.
Can you boot Fort Max from the call for even relating that pun to us?
Well, since he's running the call, no.
Damn. Well, that should be, you shouldn't ever repeat that. It's like a racist joke. You just don't say it.
This joke is so bad it's racist.
It's so bad Samurai used it.
No, I think that's why it's so bad. Like, it might have been an acceptably bad joke by itself, but being part of Samurai just, like, worsened it.
Well, it was treated as a bad joke.
You know, kind of like if you stab somebody and then take the butt of a gun and jam it in the wound.
And the reaction for it with... Dayu's reaction was that it was a terrible pun.
Now, is Samurai the stabbing or the gun?
Yes.
Okay.
And no, then, no, the stabbing is a joke, and the gun is Samurai making it worse.
And the second half of the show is mostly the monsters telling about how they got blown up by the... how they got blown up, and that those samurai keep just adding insult to injury by always posing for the camera afterwards.
Those darn kids and their dog, by which I mean Antonio. Yeah. Yes, because for the life of me, I could not think of his name for several seconds. It was a very golden moment.
It's a little plain.
No, that's Genta.
You know. So yes, Lord Zedd's Monster Mash Part 2.
Right.
And the party ends when all the monsters get tired of hearing about the samurai rangers blowing them up.
And they start blowing each other up?
No, they just leave.
Oh.
To go where?
Good question.
To the space between spaces?
They went to your mom's crevices.
Same difference.
They want to be used as generics in future series.
Yeah.
They're playing cards on that Wild West planet Saban always used to show off.
They'll be background filler on Power Rider. Well, that was Power Rangers Samurai.
It certainly was.
As interesting as it sounds.
So let's see, what was the other special that they were supposed to do?
Something Christmas related, I think.
And then, of course, there's the RPM crossover, which I'm sure will be just as frightening as it sounds. Or, you know, worse.
Or both.
Sure.
Because it's Samurai.
It sure is. Well, I guess we should get on to something worth talking about. So, Forze, I guess?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Well, it was the first thing that was released in the subs this week. Then Gokaiger came out like 14 hours later.
And it's definitely more interesting than Samurai.
Which one?
Forze.
Well, that's high praise from you, isn't it? Calling it more interesting than anything. Okay, so this week on Forze, Gintaro still wants to be friends with Tomoko. But her peculiar talismans and such are still creeping him out. Helping nothing, she's also joining a coven of witches that is formed within the school, and she wants Yuki to come with. Kengo,
I think you
were
right the first time.
Kengo is skeptical of all this witchcraft business, so he and Gintaro observe a meeting of the witch club. But the witchy women feel like the guys are cramping their mojo and kick them out. Then it's time for random acts of violence. The witches go taking petty revenge against everybody who's wronged them at school and begin displaying wacky powers such as making a swimming pool explode, pyrokinesis, and even flying. If I'm missing one, I forget.
Telekinesis?
The power to move you?
No, this didn't really move me. So Gintaro's all weirded out, and a little reluctant when Kengo sends him to fight the apparent witches as Forze, which leads to a small mishap with the recently unlocked Gatling switch. Because that seemed like such a good idea. Although I do like that the Gatling switch is started up by spinning the tiny little Gatling barrel on top of the switch.
That was a nice touch.
Kengo has Forze use camera switch to record video of the pool attack to analyze later, which reveals in a very CSI moment that the leader of the Coven of Witches is in fact an Astro Switch user, who hides near every incident and uses her Zodiart's power to make it look like the witches have magic. Which just happens to include setting a school building on fire that has Daimonji and another member of the football team inside. So Forze uses Switch 20 and transforms into Heat Gut style and puts the fire out, and goes fighting with the Zodiarts, which is like Monferno or something. Is that Monferno or Infernape? Which one looks like the Zodiarts?
Probably Monferno.
Okay.
What does the Zodiarts look like?
Fire Monkey.
Well, that could be either one of them then.
Yeah.
With a cane?
Well, it's definitely not Chimchar, though.
A pimp cane?
No, an old woman cane.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which is also on fire.
Right. So meanwhile, Scorpius appears to Tomoko and offers her the power of an Astro Switch for herself. Cliffhanger!
That cannot end well.
And next week on Forza, the school takes part in a relay race.
Oh, wait, no, that's
really
TV
happening.
Channel.
That's not next week.
Well, it's still some school in a relay race. So that was Forza about 5 times faster than Ken can do it.
That's amazing.
We're going to have a short show this week.
No, we won't.
Well, compared to last week's 2.5 hours, anything will be short.
That's what your mom said.
Okay. I'm surprised they went and had another Forza state all out and fighting right now. Pretty quick after Elect State.
But this one does look better than Elect State.
It's red. But
it
I don't think it's
faster.
I don't think it's any faster, Fort Max. But it can sure hit the red stuff with the wet stuff. Well, moving right along from that, since there's no discussion to be had with Forza, apparently.
Well, I discuss it, but I don't watch it.
Yeah, I know. And
it's okay.
And these other two are useless. So I guess it's time for
Go Tiger. It had a lot of creepy Tomoko in it.
Yeah,
it did. Every episode.
Well, every episode that has much of Tomoko in it.
Well, this one had a lot more of Tomoko, so...
Tomoko's like some kind of bowl of pudding.
No, that's tapioca.
Oh.
And this time she was flying, sort of. Well, it also was revealed that she's reading a book and is convinced the world will end in 2021.
No,
and that the only people who will survive are the ones who can fly to the moon.
Bless her heart.
That's Mickey's running joke. Speaking of which, Gokaiger?
Yo ho, me mighties, it's time for Pirate Sentai action!
Let's go.
Yeah, why not? This one was better this week.
Last week's was great.
And this week's was better than last week's.
Okay, but when you say when you say it like that, though, it makes it sound like last week's wasn't so good.
And also better than Forza.
Well, yeah. I was very sad.
It sound like last week wasn't good, but what it actually means is it took the greatest thing ever and trumped it.
Greatered it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I was very upset when Forza came out first in the fan subs this week. Because I wanted my Go-on-Jer Go-Kai-Jers.
That's why it came out last in the fan subs this
week. I know. So, Mickey?
Yes. So yeah. We left off last week with everyone being trapped on Gunman World. And so they're stuck there. But they have a brilliant idea. If we can't go to Human World... Let's go to Engine World, or Machine World, whatever it's called.
Yeah. They should have gone to Christmas World. I'm sure Santa could have got them back home.
And unfortunately, they left the trampoline behind, so Sosuke can't try to get back that way.
And I bet Santa could have combined with Gokaio, too.
So, this is the first time that we've ever gone to Machine World, isn't it?
Outside
of
flashbacks?
We've seen it before, but they never went there.
Outside of flashbacks, I would say, yeah.
But the Go-on-Jer cast never ended up there. I mean, there's never any humans there.
The wings were there.
Were they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they
okay,
human?
I didn't remember that.
That's where they got all wingy.
I remember them. It was said they were there. I don't remember any footage of them being there.
In flashbacks.
Okay. Well, cool. Whatever.
Yeah, they were human before they went there. When they came out, they were the wings.
Okay. So they decide to go on to Machine World to... force Speedor and Bear V's kid to help them. Because, you know, it's always good to force your children to do your chores.
Well, that's what being a parent is all about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, Fort Max?
I wouldn't know.
Because you are a spoiled little child?
Because she hasn't told you yet.
What, his mom hasn't told him yet that he's her son?
No, your mom hasn't told him yet that she's pregnant with Fort Max's child.
Well, that's getting a lot more complicated than I was thinking.
Oh, your life's about to get a lot more complicated.
And right on cue, they revive in Engine World.
Meanwhile, back in space, Walt Skill is not happy about the presence of the guy arc. Specifically, he's kind of pissed off the Go-Kaisers haven't showed up to stop them. What the hell, man?
You know, Ken's right. I really like Gil now.
Yeah, he's really grown on me.
They've done something different with him since some point in the series, and he's turned likable somehow. I don't know when or how, but
they started playing up the ridiculousness of him rather than having him just be sort of, you know, a bad leader. They've made him silly.
Yeah, they've made him season two, well, late season two, Lord Zedd. They made him married Lord Zedd.
I would love to have a figure out of him with like little frilly things on his cuffs.
But yeah, I like that he was resenting the Go-Kaisers for not showing up yet.
Yeah. So over on Machine World, the Go-Kaisers show up, and luckily they immediately spot McAlkin.
Well, it's kind of hard to miss it.
Well, there's only that one street.
Yeah, it's a one parking lot.
And it's kind of hard to miss.
Obviously, Nitro Convoy was on another track.
And it's hard to miss a giant F1 racer mecha.
Yeah.
And plus, these are the Go-Kaisers.
Yeah, they just find things.
And take them.
Well, they are pirates.
So, they hold a megaphone up to Speedor and Bear V to call out to McAlkin for help. And
you mean Mox Falky?
Yeah. He says, F*** you, Mon, Dad.
Well, he's a real kid then.
So then, Sosuke takes the microphone. Takes the megaphone.
And we remember why.
Speech ever.
Yeah, we remember why we love Sosuke so much.
He starts talking out of his ass. He's every single sentence.
And he's called on it every single sentence.
Not just about Speedor and Bear V, but also about Guy.
Yeah.
No, it's Guy.
Yeah, Sosuke keeps referring to him as G-U-Y Guy, like that guy.
I wonder how they spell that in kanji.
I wonder how Guy can tell the difference.
Because he's Guy.
Yeah. Oh. He imagined
it,
so.
Plus, he has to go on Wings Key. So he knows. So,
right.
As Sosuke invents the past to talk about how he raised it by the table, he's never seen him before.
He didn't raise McAlkin to be like that.
McAlkin's had enough and tells Sosuke to shove it, at which point Sosuke starts to climb over the crow's nest to get McAlkin. I love Go Under so much.
What would Gunpei have done in this situation?
He would have got very angry immediately.
I think there would have been shirt taking off involved, because he seemed to be all about that.
So, then, finally, the Go-Kaisers solves the problem of having to show
Well, no, first, they got shot at.
Yes, McAlkin starts shooting rockets at them because he's a dick.
He starts shooting rockets at them out of his butt.
Butt rockets.
This is important to specify, I think.
That's true, yes. He shoots them right out of his tailpipe. Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Everybody needed to know that.
Also,
finally,
since Ken's not here to bring it up.
Finally! We get to see the Go-Kaisers use their mecha individually. It only took 36 episodes.
They can do that?
Apparently. Apparently, I did not know this, but Go-Kai-O is made up of 5 separate parts.
Huh. That,
well, we've known that, but we didn't know that those things could do something, anything other than just come out of the Go-Kai Galleon.
And apparently, Go-Kai Marine can drive down a street.
It's one of those aqueduct cars.
Oh. Like the kind Bill
runs on water.
Like the kind Bill Nye has.
Yeah.
And also, since Ken's not here to bring it up, for anybody who's watched Tiger and Bunny, Mock Falcon is voiced by the same guy who did Kotetsu in Tiger and Bunny.
Which one is he?
Tiger.
I think he's one of the characters that plays Pretty Cure.
Blah blah Digimon blah blah Pretty Cure. I really should thank Wingus for starting that.
Yes.
But no, I only bring it up because for most of the episode, he sounds exactly like Tiger.
Which I'm sure was intentional.
Good. Well, it's just kind of weird because in Tiger and Bunny, Tiger is like, you know, Mickey's age.
1,000?
Ish, yeah. Anyway, go on.
So,
or Gokai, whatever. Yes,
on. Let's go on.
Let's go on!
And on and on.
As the Gokaigers give chase, meanwhile, back on Earth, the Zangek show up to confront the Gaiarc.
And they arrive in sort of Gokaiger style.
And we get a roll call from
Gil.
Yeah, this is a glorious little turnabout of having the villains do the Sentai show up and roll call.
Well, just one of them.
Yeah, first the Zangek show up and roll on the Gaiarc, by which I mean they walk up shooting at them. And then Gil does a roll call.
Yeah. It's... This show is so self-aware of its own tropes and cliches.
The show is so self-aware, and this episode specifically is aware of what it's crossing over with.
Yes.
And it's hitting that style exactly.
And the writing is definitely first rate for this.
Yeah. Mickey.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so
he was caught up in the moment.
And we cut back to McCalcon kicking everyone's ass over in Machine World. Because he's an Indy car that can fly like a fucking DeLorean.
Now,
oh, no,
okay.
He can jump.
Well, actually...
Oh, he's flying.
Yeah, that's powered flight, which makes me wonder, are we really sure Speedor is the father?
Oh, snap.
Because, you know, Speedor just kind of falls with style. But Jetris, now...
And Jetris and Bear V had a thing going on.
Uh-huh. And you don't see Jetris around anywhere, do you?
Oh, this shit's getting all Mari Povich up in here.
And wasn't Jetris engine number...
Jetris is just fine.
Wait. But Jetris was engine number 7, right?
Right.
So if you put his 7 with Bear V's 3 and you squiggle it around a little bit, it still looks like a 13.
Yeah, because a 7 counts like a 1 in some cases.
Yeah, especially if you can't write numbers really well.
Of course, there's also the issue of the fact that he's partnered with the Go-On Wing.
And?
Not following you. Was that it?
Apparently.
No, it's more that they probably just show up out that wings would just show up out of nowhere and
go for boom time.
Yeah, just show up out of nowhere and get Jetris back. So,
besides, I think boom time is what Speedor and Bearby were doing in the off season. That's how we got Mount Falcon. No, okay.
I'm not quite certain where any of this is going, but.
Well, anyway, we're back to the Gokai machines acting individually again.
Acting individually and starting to kick Makalkin's ass.
Well, after Makalkin ran Gokai Trailer and Gokai Marine off the road, because they're just the girls.
Of course.
That's true. But
yes.
Marvelous Joe and Doc team up their mecha to form a horrible abomination half combination.
It's Gokai Professor Xavier. Especially more so in a minute.
They take Gokai Torso and plop down on top of McCalcon and chain him and ride him like a f***ing horse.
I think your mom had an experience like that.
Except it wasn't at 88 miles per hour.
So... Marvelous then proceeds to berate McCalcon of saying that all you know how to do is run away. You're kind of a pussy.
He's not wrong.
It's a Japanese thing.
Yeah. McCalcon, shamed, comes to and agrees to help the Gokaigers by opening up the gate.
If he can join their crew.
Yes.
I think they're going to have a hard time fitting him inside the galleon.
I don't know. They can fit a whole kinds of shit in the galleon, apparently.
Yeah. All they got to do is put him in the treasure box.
Yeah.
They can attach the line to him.
Yeah.
So now the Gokaigers have their own engine partner.
But sadly, no rep.
Which, I really like how that played out.
The engine rep?
No, how McCalcon is their partner, like the Go-Onders had engine partners.
Yeah.
It makes him different than Furumaru or Magic Dragon shit. It makes him a member of the crew.
Yeah, it also sticks with the style of Goanger.
Right, and that feels very important to me.
Yes, I agree with that.
He joined the show in a way consistent with Goanger.
Yeah.
And not just to sell toys.
Right. Should they actually care about Goanger, which it means a lot to me, because I care about Goanger.
Of course. No, I'm totally with you on all that.
And it was appropriately very silly.
Well, yes. Anyway, so back on Earth.
Gokais show up and see the...
First, Dine, there's still the Mook battle going on.
Right. They show up to the Zangyak and the Gaiark battling it out.
And sadly, it still doesn't look quite as good as the Tenga and Kog battle.
Well, that's because nobody has feathers to tear off.
Or anyone's getting rended limb from limb.
Right, the best part of the Tenga Kog battle was people getting plucked and dismembered in the process of it.
Yes. What was this in? That sounds interesting.
What?
What was that in? That sounds interesting.
Zeo?
Which episode?
The episode where Jason is losing his powers. One of the ones close to the end, or possibly the last one, I forget. Would that be the last episode?
I think it may have been the last one.
I'll have to investigate that.
Which is why they went for dismembering.
I guess, yeah. At that point, who cares? Well, and then that offsets the fight at the end of the episode, which was awful.
Yeah. And it even started out with Rita and Zed showing up on Earth.
Just to tease Jason.
Yeah, just to mock him. And then when the Machine Empire showed up. And then when the Machine Empire shows up, they start mocking them because they're laughing stocks now.
Yeah. It was really well done in the first 5 minutes of the episode, and then it just went so bad. But back to Gokaiger. That's Mickey's cue.
So is that. Okay.
Okay, so where Gokaiger. Were we? Yes, Insarn is whipping the shit out of everybody, Barazorg is slicing up fools, and Waltz Gill is just kind of standing around waving his arms.
Because that's all he can do.
He's good at that.
And the dump troops are fighting the Ugots.
Yeah.
And again, it's the Gokaigers and say, whatever, we'll fight you all.
Sure, what the hell.
And then they do.
Well,
because they're just that awesome.
They fight all the dump troops. Gil decides it's a good idea. Well, no, Insarn decides it's a good idea for everybody else to leave.
And of course, I do like how in the background you see Waltz Gil's first hiding behind Insarn, the Barazorg, and then going behind a little one of those concrete flower garden things.
Yes. Yeah. And then he trips over it.
Yes.
The last time he saw the Gokaigers in person, he got shot.
That's true. And the Gokaigers are a lot stronger now too. They got a much bigger gun to shoot him with. Did Mickey go away again?
No, I'm sorry. I was just gathering my thoughts for a second.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so they fight the dump troops for a while, and then it's time. Bust out those Goanger keys.
Yes.
And the music.
And the transformation sequence.
Yes, and the transformation sequence is fun because you see them Pink's color change from pink to black.
Yeah, if not for that part, I would think that it'd be better for them to have had the Gokaiger's helmetless for that.
Yeah.
There was one thing missing, though.
What?
The engine's sounds going around them.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Well, that would be for the roll call, though, wouldn't it?
No. No, the sounds written out in English.
Oh, okay, okay.
I
get you.
Yeah.
Worth it just to see Guy put two helmets into Form 1.
Right. Yeah, that...
Imagination!
It worked, though.
Yes. So, met on.
And then they do that roundhouse kick thing for the roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
But Guy didn't do the backflips for the wing, did he?
I don't think so, no. No, he did not. Okay.
Well, he's not a go-on-wing, so...
No, he's the go-on-wings. He's both.
He's not Hiroto or Miyu, so he can't.
Well, he could probably do that better than Doc did the roll call pose. Bunny ears attack. Came. Bunny ears came back.
Yeah, he's been doing that a lot.
But yeah, doctoring the attack footage.
Yes.
That was particularly inspired, I think. I think Doc was more channeling Ziggy than Honto.
A little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
Someone called out Boom Boom Bong Bong. Oh, so it's Guy, that's right.
It's right. Always Guy.
Yeah. Of course.
It's a nice little touch.
It makes up for not doing the flip.
The Wings would never approve of that.
You know, the Wings are kind of dicks. Awesome dicks, but still dicks.
Right.
So, dump troops disposed. It's down to them and Filthical.
Yeah.
Which means it's time for special weapons.
And I gotta say, it's really strange hearing I'm's voice come out of Go On Black.
Well, that's why I wanted this to be a Gunpei episode specifically, but Sosuke worked out pretty well, too.
It's just a pretty sharp contrast.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that. But then it's weird having her do Geki Chopper also.
So all six of the Gokais use the Goandra special weapons, culminating with Marvelous and Doc using theirs last. And Doc is kind of spinning out of control on that highway.
I was kind of disappointed they didn't use the Super Highway Buster, but I can see if, since this happened after they got the Galleon Buster, you know, they would need to pimp that toy more.
Yeah, and plus, I enjoy seeing the individual weapon attacks more anyway.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying they should have done the Super Highway Buster instead of the individual attacks. Just finish up the Goandra sequence with the Super Highway Buster. But I mean, I get that they have to advertise the Galleon Buster more.
Yeah, it would seem really redundant to use both of them, so.
Yeah.
And then, Industrial Revolution.
Industrial Revolution.
Yes.
Begin the download.
No.
So the battle goes poorly for them.
Gee, who would have thought?
Yeah. Sosuke then tells them they can now use the Goandra Ultimate Power since they now have an engine partner. The Goandra Power is partnership.
Yeah.
Until 10 episodes from now when it's revealed to be the power of Cluster.
No, I think that'll be shorter than 10 episodes from now.
I'd say 2.
I'd say next week.
I think they would have revealed it in the preview for next week.
Yeah. They would have.
Okay, fine. We'll go with week after.
So they pop in the Go-On keys, and out pops a giant engine cell.
And a giant engine cast.
Yes.
That was fantastic.
I love they still have to insert an engine cell into McAlkin and make him grow big. Yes. You know, he's already pretty huge already.
Yeah, he's like the size of a regular car as an engine cast. So let's make it bigger.
And I love that Sosuke does the move to tell them how to put it in.
Sosuke did all the moves.
Hold it out and thrust the engine cell in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sosuke's actor seemed to be pretty into it.
And then we get narrating.
Yeah. Go on your style narrating.
Yep.
This is such a good episode.
McAlkin speeds around, shooting the shit out of Filthical. And then it's time for Indy Centaur mode.
It's Gokai Xavier.
Yeah.
Gokai Wheelchair.
Official name, Go-On Gokai-O.
That's less fun. That's less fun than all those names that are insulting to people confined to wheelchairs.
I find the way they executed Go-On Gokai-O to be pretty impressive.
You mean using like actual models and such?
Yeah, mixing the models with the suit footage was blended really, really well. Where
and also they had an articulated model in there as well.
Yeah.
That as it and the camera were moving around, the model was moving its arms around.
Well, and then there was the shot from behind Go-On Gokai where it was speeding toward Filthical. You know, and you could see the distance closing in. It's hard to describe it, but the way the shot was put together came out really well, too.
Yeah.
For compositing.
And none of this footage, I don't think any of this footage was CGI.
No, the closest you got to CGI was just compositing.
Right.
And some of the effects
things about that. Goandra didn't use CGI for the individual door pieces. They used actual models for a whole bunch of shots.
They only really used CGI for combination footage.
Right. And G-12's finisher, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really cool they kept in that style instead of switching to a CGI crap fest.
Yeah, it was a really good callback to the style of Go On Your Witch, you know, that's the recurring thing in the whole episode. They kept it really consistent with what Go On Your was about.
Now, towards the end of this fight, did anyone else think he was going to have a finisher like Tor where he just lands on the monster?
He's not heavy enough. He's not like your mom. Plus, Gokaio didn't have a staff to twirl around like a helicopter blade.
He could use the swords that way.
That would totally work.
That's just where my mind went when I saw the angle on the fight finishing move.
Unlike where your mind went.
Trying to keep my mind away from Tor as much as possible.
That wonderful plastic box.
The thin cardboard box barely wrapped around it.
Yeah. I think Tor was mostly in the box to protect the box during shipping.
To keep the box from caving in.
Yeah.
So, Filtha Cal defeated. They all
No, he resigned.
Yes, he resigns. The hell up. They all head to the field for the epilogue. And Sosuke decides that being a pirate seems pretty fun. I want to join.
So he's going to be Gokai Fire.
Yes.
But it's been done.
I can't wait for the fan art of that.
Yes. No kidding. What would that look like? I guess it would be like
it would look like Time Fire with that little logo that he pulled out of from nowhere in Sosuke Bonky.
No, what I'm thinking is that it would be like a regular Gokaiger suit, but instead of the black bodysuit, that would be red and the jacket part would be black.
Yeah.
Which would actually be pretty awesome looking. Like, see, I don't want to see fan art of that. I want to see somebody do that with a figure art. And then I want that figure art.
I don't know, there's an awful lot of joints on figure arts.
And boy, that would be an expensive custom.
Maybe just one of those simple little plastic things, just with movable arms.
Doing the Ranger Key.
That could be done.
Yeah, that'd be easy to do.
See, and that was the most depressing part of the whole episode, is knowing that Sosuke wanted to stay on the show, but he's not going to be because the Go-Cutters don't want him.
Well, Guy wants him.
Yeah, I don't think the Go-Cutters give a shit with Guy. I think so.
Well, that's because Guy wants to keep every past Sentai member he finds in the street. You know, it's like in that Deno episode.
Animal follows him home.
It's like that Deno episode we watched, and Guy is Ryuta, taking home all the animals and, you know, yes, bird Imogen. That would actually be a pretty funny episode if the Gokaigers come home one day and Guy's got the galleon, the main room of the galleon filled with past Sentai members.
They're all confused. They don't know where they are.
He's kidnapping them when they're asleep or in the toilet.
And also, like, has owner with them as well for whatever reason.
He just offered him some more rice.
Yes. So next week on Gokaiger, it's the Waltz Gill Megazord.
The Nepotism Megazord.
And we finally see the Emperor.
Well, how about that? I'm kind of thinking that Gil's going to die soon.
Of course, he's interesting now.
And he's also definitely scared.
That's not usually a good sign.
I mean, he's just either that or just listening in from around the corner. Probably both.
Of course, usually the villains die when they become confident, not when they become scared.
Well, he's been confident since the beginning.
Well, it's that whole Zen of Defeat thing, I think.
Now, he hasn't been... Well, he's found the Zen of Defeat.
Yes.
But he was confident. He hasn't been competent at all.
I never said competent.
Yeah.
Confident.
Yeah, he hasn't been confident.
Yeah, he's confident.
Yeah. He hasn't been either. He's mostly been angry.
That too.
He's been sick and whiny. Times.
Still, I think I'll miss Gil when he's gone.
They just need to have Gil keep coming back in every series.
Do you want to be great? If the Emperor is even more Gil than Gil is.
Man, how could the Empire even function like that?
Well, maybe Gil's like a third generation. Like, his dad is like inherited from his dad.
No, well, it's just that they all have that they all are surrounded by people who can actually do their job.
I was just gonna say the Emperor probably has his own version of Damaris.
Yeah,
who is, you know, keeping things under control. He's tempering the Emperor's wild, crazy orders, and, you know, making sure things actually happen in the Empire. And the Emperor's all like, "Okay, did you go put a bow around that star like I told you to?" "Yes, sir. Been done."
So we're also getting the Emperor's Royal Guard dump troops.
What color are they?
Well, red, of course.
That's uninspired.
They're red Scormen.
They should
with
be
wings.
Like, they should be plaid or something.
Everything important from the Emperor comes in red.
Yeah. Now, some black Scormen would look pretty cool.
Well, I mean, we already got Walt's Gale with blue, so it makes sense to go to the opposite end of that.
I suppose.
Because red is the higher rank from blue.
Well, that too.
Japanese color theory.
Influenced by years of Super Sentai.
Or superstition.
Both. Same thing. Okay, so I think it's time for a break.
Most definitely.
Because yes. I hate to tell you, but we took like 33 minutes doing that Gokaiger episode.
Well, it was awesome.
It was awesome.
There was stuff to talk about.
Yes.
Unlike, okay. You know, Forze.
It's okay. Next week when Ken's back with us and talking about Forze, we'll just make him drag along so that takes like 45 minutes.
We'll make him talk about this week's Forze next week.
Yeah. No, we'll make Ken watch the relay race and talk to us about that.
Yes.
Okay, get in touch with the Overtime guys and see if they can get that encoded for us.
You're listening to Superhero Time.
Hey everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna, and do you like video games? Do you like people who like video games? Well, if so, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. It's the weekly video game podcast of record. News, rumors, in-depth discussion of new and retro gaming, plus the occasional contest or giveaway. So if you game, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. Check us out at tfradio.net, a proud member of the Transformers Internet Radio Network.
The third strike, you're on a Street Fighter 3.
And now back to action with Superhero Time.
What happened?
What?
What happened?
I don't know what did happen.
Everyone just disappeared.
Your cow moved.
My cow moved?
That's yes.
Mickey has a cow? Wait, why am I coming out of Paladin?
Do we really want to answer that?
And now you're coming out of Mickey.
What am I?
Okay, that's even more disturbing.
You're still coming out. You're still coming out of yourself, Fort Max. Nothing's changed there. It's still not right, but it's the same not right it usually is.
Skype has been destroyed.
This feels unclean.
I don't like this.
I'm not as fond of it as you are either.
Everyone's coming out correctly over here.
Maybe that's part of the problem.
At least I can still hear everybody.
And it's still recording, right?
Yes.
Good.
Good, even we don't want to lose any of that.
No, I will find a way to work that in somewhere, but not right here.
You'll work it in where everything's coming out.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Superhero Time, where your mom jokes go to die.
Hey, this is JD from Fanboy Versus. Join me, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely live every Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, or download the podcast. We'll discuss the week's biggest comic news as well as review the current week's best issues. So tune in to Fanboy Versus right here on the TF Radio Network.
You're listening to Power Playback on Superhero Time. Look for Superhero Time's Power Playback every Friday afternoon on Twitter at TF Radio.
All right, so Power Playback this week was scheduled in April. Because Paladin had the idea to watch two episodes of Kamen Rider Kiva for Halloween, even though the show won't actually post on Halloween. Good going, dude.
I still thought it was an appropriate theme.
Yeah, it probably is. All right, well, this is your idea, Paladin, so I'm making it your problem.
Okay, I have notes for this time.
Oh, that's not as fun.
It's fun for me, because I get to screw with your expectations.
Yeah, but then who am I going to throw under a bus? Ken's not here.
I screwed your mom's expectations.
Under a bus? Nickel.
They got shattered.
She never saw it coming. Bump, bump.
Okay, Paladin?
So anyway, I picked episodes 5 and 6 for this, just because I thought they'd be interesting.
Too bad Wingus isn't here this week. There's a spider.
He is our hero.
I thought that was Captain Planet. You know, because he's going to take pollution down to zero.
Yeah.
Fine, screw you.
All right, so this section starts off with our quote-unquote hero, Wataru, explaining things to his neighbors yet again. And you can probably guess just from this intro that they don't exactly like him.
Well, he's kind of unpleasant.
He's a bit of a shut-in.
He's like, I don't know what he's like.
Smooth.
All the neighbors refer to Wataru as Ghost Boy because he just keeps to himself and only goes outside wearing strange masks and goggles and shit to protect him from everything.
He's allergic to the world.
That's their excuse, anyway.
He's allergic to the world except for the young schoolgirl who comes and visits him every day. Because that's not weird at all.
Not inappropriate at all, of course.
No. Especially when she calls herself Wataru's mother.
Yeah, no subtext there at all.
Oh, Japan.
It frightens me that I'm becoming accustomed to this.
It should.
Anyway, Shizuka tells the neighbors that Wataru wants to give a violin concert for them as a way to make up for his past misbehavior.
But his misbehavior of staying in his house and minding his own business?
And he also disturbs the neighborhood with unusual smells.
What does that mean, exactly?
I think it means he's the typical convention goer.
Does he eat a lot of feta cheese every night, or...?
Okay, Wataru's lifelong ambition is to make a violin exactly like the one his father made, but he has no idea what the formula is, so he keeps trying random ingredient combinations, and they've been kind of eccentric. Like, in the first episode, he's using dead fish.
The formula for the stain and lacquer, specifically.
Yeah. Before that, it was snake skin. Before that, it was dog poo.
Basically, anything that will turn brown.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he could just stick it under your mom's armpit for a couple hours and see if that would help.
Why doesn't he just take the original one down to Lowe's and have him paint match it?
I don't think they have Lowe's in Japan.
Oh.
I think they make...
What about Rose?
No, I think it'd be like, you know, Rosu.
Oh, too racist. Sorry.
Sutherland's, maybe.
Sutherland's? What?
It must be a Texas thing.
Or an Australian. Bang. It's an Australian joke.
But of course, since Wataru is basically a nervous wreck, the concert does not end well.
Does it start well?
I guess not.
You mean when he starts stringing the violin while somebody else plays?
Exactly. It's basically a complete disaster.
Much like this segment.
And meanwhile, there's a fashion model named Megumi being stalked by Dr. Narutaki.
Now, Megumi's one of the regulars.
Yeah.
She's kind of a bitch.
But not as much as Yuri was.
And not in a completely unjustifiable sense, too. Because she's also apparently being stalked by not yet Ixa.
So basically just everybody's stalking her.
Well, she's the only attractive thing in the show.
At least in this part of the show.
And you won't go to jail for.
Well, no, later in the series, there's the other one that comes in who has to be old enough since she was in Fize.
So, he keeps saying I'll always be Obatakeru, was it?
Ghost Boy.
What does that mean? Okay, that's what that means. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, because apparently it was beyond TV Nihon to actually translate all the dialogue.
Well, I'm sure they translated it once to explain what it meant when it was first said, but then never again.
Right, in the first episode they explained it, but they haven't bothered to since then. That's TV Nihon
for you.
Their ways
are so mystifying.
Anyway, Nago wants Megumi to use him as a bodyguard, but she's a little more than resistant to that.
Nago being so, not yet Ixa.
Yeah.
What?
Well, he's kind of a bitch, too, so it equals out.
I'm not sure bitch is the right word, but he's something.
Yes.
He's also a bounty hunter.
Like dog?
His hair is
not like Boba Fett.
But yeah.
No, he's not. Well, actually, he could be a Boba Fett.
Does the guy like a punk?
Although 86 Ix's helmet looks more like Boba Fett's than 2008 Ix's helmet.
Okay, when that's when they're having their conversation, we get our first time jump back to the 1986 cast.
Which is really the only reason to watch the show.
Yes, a woman named Yuri picks up a payphone and meets the true star of Kiva, Otoya.
See, that's how you can tell it's in 1986, because there's actually payphones around.
Okay, so for those of us kind of unfamiliar with Kiva, what's this whole 86 time jump thing about?
Well,
it shows off how the events in 1986 relate to what's happening now in, well, what was then now when the show aired, 2008.
Basically, there's two parallel storylines.
There's a second cast?
Yes. And the 86 cast is supposed to be a direct parallel of the 2008 cast.
And is related to most of them.
Exactly.
Is there a Kiva in the 86 cast as well, or is he just in the modern cast?
Not yet.
The 86 cast works to create the chain of events that will lead to there being a Kiva in 2008.
There's a Kiva on the 86 side late in the series, but not right now.
So not yet, but still in the past.
Yes. Yes. In the past, not yet.
When will then be now?
Later.
When they have a beard.
Then will be now later.
But we're at then now.
No, they don't have the beard that they'll have in the future yet.
And yes, we have no bananas.
Okay, so in 1986... We get to see Otoya doing what he does best, hitting on the attractive female only to get shot down immediately.
I'm having flashbacks to Godzilla here.
Okay, then we go back to 2008 again, where Wataru begs Nago to work as his apprentice so he can be less Wataru-ish. And Nago accepts, basically so he can have an opportunity to lord it over him.
Because Nago's kind of like that.
Yeah, he's a dick.
But not in the standard dick sense. He's a special kind of dick.
Super special.
Yeah.
Super dick.
He's super dicky.
Okay, jumps back to 86 again, where Yuri's working at the same coffee shop they were at in 2008. So Otoya attempts to hit on her again, only to have Uncle Phil toss him back out on the street.
Well, that is kind of how it plays. But yeah, Otoya is the best character in Kiva.
He's Pepe Le Pew with a slightly better scent.
And a less ridiculous accent.
No, it's about the same.
Eh.
Anyway, the guy who tossed Otoya out on the street challenges the master of the coffee shop that if the coffee sucks from his point of view, then he won't pay for it. Don't you wish you could just do that in real life?
It might be nice when I'm low on cash, yeah. Now, Uncle Phil there is Jiro, who will become important later.
Right.
But no coffee sucks. It's coffee.
All coffee sucks.
Your mother sucks.
For a nickel. Anyway, Jiro uses this ridiculous aroma test to find out whether the coffee's good or not, and actually does end up paying for it.
What a nice guy.
Or even if he does toss customers out on the street.
Otoya probably deserved it.
Oh, he definitely deserved it. He's Otoya.
But Otoya has this great fashion sense. With all the plaid and everything.
It is just a little ridiculous.
Oh,
but
I love
it. In the best way.
I should start dressing like that.
Back to 2008 again, Wataru's first assignment is to observe and protect Megumi without her knowing about it. He runs into the overcoat guy from the beginning, and that guy also claims to be working for Nago. Wataru does not question this in the slightest because he's Wataru.
He's a little bit of a shut-in.
More than a little bit.
That's who he reminds me of, Ryotaro.
Yeah, actually, there is some similarity there.
He's sort of meek and me.
Yeah. Except that he can actually transform into a fully capable rider form by himself.
He doesn't need to be possessed in order to do so.
Although he can be possessed if he wants to be. Sort of.
He doesn't transform into rider useless.
No, right. That's Kuga.
Well, a Kuga, anyway.
Alright, they continue observing Megumi in several locations, including the swimming pool.
Is it that same swimming pool from Forza a couple weeks ago?
I think it is.
Well, no, I mean, it kind of makes sense. Obviously, that's a low-cost place to shoot, which is why all the porn videos go there.
And apparently nobody finds anything questionable about two guys just sitting at the bottom of the swimming pool looking at the swimmers.
Well, it's Japan.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
They wouldn't find anything questionable about it if the two guys were sitting down there watching the swimmers and had tentacles coming out of them, too. Because it's Japan.
But things come to a head when they get caught in Megumi's room during a photo shoot. Well, at least Wataru gets caught. The other dude runs off, presumably after raiding Megumi's underwear drawer.
Because it's Japan.
Exactly. And he's a serious creeper.
Because it's Japan.
Right. Nago explains just how badly the screw-up was, so Wataru spends the rest of the evening moping in the sauna.
He does that a lot.
Although then, Kivat tries to cheer him up.
As he floats by in his bent violin boat.
With a shower cap.
Yes.
The show needs more Kivat, I think.
Yeah, Kivat's pretty good. Just, it gets bad when Tatsalot shows up. Tatsalot's like the upgrade Kivat, but
less Kivat-ish.
Yeah.
Alright, so Megumi goes back to her apartment and establishes the link between time frames for this particular episode. The woman that Otoya has been wooing in 1986 is her mother.
Yeah.
And on cue, back in 86, we see Otoya out for revenge against the dude who cock-blocked him straight to the curb the previous day.
That's not going to end well for, like, 35 more episodes.
Well, nothing really ends well for Otoya.
Well, so
there's a fight between Jiro and him, and it's interrupted by this one guy who just walks straight through them.
That flasher
dude.
And they
just go right back to fighting like it never happened.
I liked that guy.
And meanwhile, Yuri walks straight into a spider web. So then we cut back to normal time again. Wataru tries to start over by being a bodyguard for Megumi. Until Creeper Guy from yesterday comes up asking for an autograph.
In a parking garage.
No, in the parking
garage. Not creepy at all.
Still toy.
Well, the point is that, you know, he comes up to her in an empty, enclosed space rather than out in public somewhere.
There's nothing suspicious about that at all, of course.
No. Neither is there anything suspicious when he claims her as his own.
And then reveals his true form as the Sheep Fangire.
Yeah, about that. That is like the worst sheep costume. It looks nothing at all like a sheep.
A sheep with dreadlocks.
Of course, the southerner is the one critical of the sheep.
He looks like a sheep with dreadlocks made out of stained glass.
The New Zealander should be the one critical of sheep.
Well, we don't have a New Zealander, but we do have Fort Max.
Yeah, Australia's close enough, right?
Sure.
Even if it is Space Australia?
In the Space 1980s, yes.
Space Dingo will eat your space, baby.
Space.
Sheep Fangire is clearly obsessed with Megumi, but unfortunately it turns out that Megumi is also a trained Fangire hunter.
That's convenient.
Sure.
Extremely convenient. So, of course, her reaction is the reaction any sane woman would have to a stalker. Start shooting him.
With little silver darts.
Although her gun is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Even if it's not quite as effective as it should be. But it does give Wataru enough time to summon Kivat and transform.
Well, it would have been more effective if the guy was using it.
Or if the gun was bigger, maybe.
And I really like the Kiva suit.
Yes, so do I. It just plays well.
Yeah, I guess.
The transformation is a little weird with Kivat biting his hand to start things off, but I do think they craft a good story and combat sequences around it.
The toy has to bite your hand to start up, too.
That doesn't sound terribly fun.
Well, there's, like, little buttons inside the mouth.
Oh, okay.
They, you know,
that's
you
pretty
to,
cool.
you open the flap on the bottom and you press it down in your hand and it starts the sequence. Then you hang it upside down in the belt and it does its thing.
Well, that's cool. As an aside, I really like the whole stained glass motif they have going in Kiva.
For the Fangirls?
Yeah.
It is an impressive visual element.
Mm-hmm. Although that had to be difficult to keep up toward the end of the series.
I'm sure that got expensive for the costumes.
Well, paint is paint, you know.
Anyway, Kiva's normal powers aren't strong enough to fight off a sheep, so he has to become were-Kiva.
That really just sums up the show entirely right there. Kiva's normal powers are not strong enough to fight a sheep. So,
so he sums up the power of Garo?
It's the power of were-Kiva.
Garuru Saber.
Metal Garuru Saber.
Yes.
But then the fight is interrupted by Nago, because he wants to kill Kiva.
While Kiva's trying to keep Megumi from getting kidnapped.
Yeah, because, so again, Nago is a dick.
So he's about to Henshin there, but who does he change into now?
Ixa.
Okay.
But that won't actually happen for, like, 7 more episodes.
Right. This is just a cock tease.
Yeah.
It's kind of early to even introduce a secondary rider, isn't it?
Which is why they didn't.
Well, but his character is still there, though, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
And the distraction in the fight gives Sheep just enough time to run away with the girl.
Yes.
And that's the end of episode 5.
This episode seemed really quick to me. I mean, it was paced very well, where it seemed like it sort of flew by.
A lot of stuff happened, but it didn't seem like it was stuck anywhere.
Yeah. It had very good pacing.
Although, that's usually a key element, especially in shows where it shifts between perspectives like this one does.
I was going to say, I mean, that's kind of true of Kiva in general, because they have to keep it a little more brief since they're working two stories at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think it works to their advantage.
Yeah. It can't get bogged down like other shows do.
Cough, cough, O's, cough.
Ha ha ha. Or cough, cough, superhero time, cough.
That's right. We used to talk about two things at once. It makes it go by much quicker.
Or like 4 or 5 things at once.
Or nothing at all.
Well, before we segue off another cliff, let's start episode 6.
Oh, the segues.
That guy died.
And now I have another addition to Mickey's pile of quotes of people dying. I've got like 4 of them already. I think Mickey's taking his work too seriously. What was that?
What was what?
Fort Max took off his pants.
Okay, so episode 6.
6 starts off with Otoya meeting up with the guy who walked through the fight yesterday, who turns out to be Yuri's boss from the organization of Fangirl Hunters.
The wonderful blue sky.
Well, it has several names. Otoya agrees to go out and find Yuri if he can become a hunter, too.
I'm a hunter. Wouldn't you like to be a hunter, too?
And finding her is easier said than done, because Yuri then wakes up in the amusement park lair of the spider Fangire.
Well, no, see what it is? Otoya's been watching episodes of Hunter that have been simulcast from America, because, you know, it's the 80s.
Using a high-tech dubbing machine?
Yes.
Did he cook the tuna?
Well, no, because it's Japan. They'd be appalled at cooked tuna in Japan. Don't you know, Japanese people don't eat anything but rice and raw fish.
And I thought coffee. I was being racist.
I'm only reciting what cartoons when I was a kid taught me. Because remember in Ninja Turtles, Splinter was a Japanese guy that got turned into a rat and all he ever ate was sushi.
No, he ate jelly bean and peanut butter pizza sometimes.
But mostly he just ate the sushi.
What does Kiva eat?
I don't know.
Probably rice. Because it's clean.
I don't ever remember seeing Kiva eat. That's kind of strange. So anyway, episode 6.
Okay. Spider Fangire's been obsessed with Yuri ever since she stopped him from feeding on a wedding party. So now he's captured her to make her his bride.
That makes... Well, that's Japan.
Yes.
And wait, he tells her that with his hand.
What?
Was that in the first episode?
Yes.
Okay.
And he explains all this with a hand puppet.
This guy was very unsettling.
That's why I like these episodes.
And
he was creepier before he put the rubber suit on.
And he recurs throughout the series.
I don't think I want to watch Kiva now.
He's not there that often, and he eventually dies.
But in the meantime, the hand puppets keep coming back.
With the same stupid laugh over and over and over again. So anyway, in 2008, Megumi has also been captured by Spider Fangire because she looks almost exactly like her mother.
Except not really.
Well, it's close enough in Spider Fangire's warped mind.
You would think with eight eyes you'd be able to tell the difference between them.
Bitches all look the same. See, look, she's got eyes, breasts. Same person.
I think you might have the order of those reversed.
Well, he was being polite.
Oh, okay. But that's probably what the hand puppets were thinking.
Yeah.
See, that's why he's got the hand puppets on. So at least that way he's got six eyes when he's in his human form. No? Okay.
No. Okay, back in 1986, in an act that must be incredibly routine to him by now, Otoya goes looking for the hot chick and only ends up with a handful of white goo.
That must have taken you a while to come up with.
Not really, actually. That's one of the other reasons I picked this episode.
That spider web is... has anyone in Japan ever seen what a spider web is made out of? Do they have spiders there?
No.
Probably
okay, because that looks nothing at all like spiderweb material.
Ah, well, think back to the episode of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers with the spider monster, where they represented the spiderwebs with soap bubbles.
I don't remember that at all.
Well, go watch the episode.
I don't doubt you.
Yeah, go watch the episode. You'll see. It was hilariously awful even when I was 7 years old. Or was I nine? One or the other.
Anyway, Jiro, the guy who tossed him out of the coffee shop earlier, agrees to help him track down Yuri using his incredible nose.
It's really not that special of a nose. Oh, and it's worth pointing out that the guy who plays Jiro played one of the secondary writers in Hibiki.
Well, that doesn't matter. It's just Hibiki.
Yeah.
So Otoya tracks Yuri to the amusement park where she's suffering having Spider Fangire paint her toenails.
And then what happens?
Otoya breaks in, tries to attack, and fails miserably.
Well, there's a shock.
And Megumi's suffering the same fate in 2008, where it's revealed that Sheep captured her to bring her to Spider. Except Sheep's now double-crossing on the deal because he wants her all to himself. And, you know, creepers will do that, after all.
If you say so.
And Wateru comes in, having apparently tracked them down, and... Of course, his brilliant plan is to just ask him nicely to let her go. It goes about as well as Otoya's plan.
Ah, just with less punching.
Okay, back in 1986 again, Otoya's been captured and Spider Fangire's put on more makeup.
He needs to stop doing that. He's like a creepier version of Kefka.
Mickey's distress is the best part of this episode.
Palin doesn't need to be allowed to choose episodes anymore. They upset me.
That's why I keep choosing, too.
Well, the last time he chose an episode was in April. And we're only just now getting to it.
So anyway, Otoya bites off Yuri's necklace so they can have something to cut themselves free. Which I'm sure he enjoyed a little bit too much.
What is the thing made of, razor blades?
How did it not cut his mouth?
Yeah, how is that supposed to work?
Because Japan.
No. Japan is why they could sit at the bottom of the pool and nobody cared. Japan is not why they could use the necklace to cut their ropes.
Oh, because science.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, as they try to escape, Yuri asks Otoya why he keeps hitting on her all the f***ing time.
Because she has breasts.
And a pulse.
Well, instead of that obvious answer, he gives her this speech about how all humans are music, and he likes the music that comes from her.
By music, he means breasts, right?
Yes, but Yuri doesn't figure that out, and she finds the statement just charming enough to not let him die a horrible death at the claws of Spider.
I'm sure she'll regret that later.
Immensely. But just then, Spider comes back in, having selected a wedding dress for her.
It's a classy low-cut number. Why, of course.
Or maybe the dress was for him. I wasn't paying that close attention.
Neither would
surprise me. He
probably
made it from his own silk.
Well, it didn't look like it was made from unwound cotton balls.
Could be from different type of balls.
Oh, okay. That kind of silk. I get you.
And Megumi finds her mother's necklace in 2008 and uses it to cut themselves free. And again repeats the humans are music strategy from Otoya. And Wataru recognizes his father's words and they inspire him to keep fighting again.
Okay.
It's about as good as you can get for inspirational speeches here.
I guess.
Yeah. That's when Sheep starts shooting Fangire because he still wants Megumi all to himself.
You would think a sheep would have an advantage over a spider.
I'm kind of surprised that the sheep's weapon is a gun. I wouldn't associate sheeps with shotguns.
Well, what then?
I like a ramming attack.
Isn't the sheep usually the one that gets rammed?
Bump bumps.
No, rammed, not rimmed.
It's both.
No, ram is a male sheep, isn't it? Or something along those lines, so...
Quit being a Fort Max.
Your mother's a Fort Max.
She died. Okay, 86. Otoya tries again and fails again miserably to rescue Yuri from Spider, and then the mysterious Jiro shows up to help again. He lures Spider out into the forest, where Jiro takes off his coat and reveals his true form. Garurumon.
Except blue.
Garurumon's blue.
I thought he was Garo.
The stripes are blue.
No, he's more like...
Garurumon.
Garurumon. He fights Digihorrors.
No, Garurumon's more lavender and purple.
It's a much more normal color for a werewolf to be.
Yes. So yeah, Jiro's the wolfman.
And Wolfman is more than strong enough to beat Fangire.
At least apparently, this one.
And also apparently Fangire has anatomically correct web shooters.
Yeah, I love that shot of him swinging from his ass.
Yeah.
Japan. Well, at least Kirihiko didn't do that.
Why would Kirihiko do that?
Because butt.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I thought you were implying that Nazca was spider-related somehow, and I wasn't following you.
It's all about butts.
He cannot lie.
Anyway, Spider spits in Wolfman's eye, and that allows him to get away somehow. So back in 2008, Kiva's fighting the sheep again. Only this time, Kiva decides to use his own firepower to beat the sheep's cannon, and summons Gil to help him out.
What is Gil's motif? I couldn't tell from the shots.
He's the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Ah, okay.
Also, the dead suit.
What?
Dead suit?
The suit. They can't. The suit fell apart, I think.
Oh.
Hmm.
Whoops.
They must have got it too wet.
And before that, it cuts to Castle Doron, which is Kiva's flying companion thing.
The ridiculousness of how it appears.
Yes, it's disguised as a part of a skyscraper somewhere.
Of the skyscraper to go fight.
Yeah, and the curtain unrolls, and it sort of steps out, and the rest of the skyscraper just falls straight down like it wasn't there.
And as many times as that happens, you would think that the people upstairs of that would be suspicious.
Oh, it's just Japan.
Yeah.
They go, and they're just irritated by it. Like, as they're irritating downstairs neighbor. They, like, thump on the floor with a broom whenever he does it.
And anyway, Jiro's in the castle now, and he spent the last 20 years playing chess with Gil and Frankie.
That sounds like hell.
Well, see, creature from the Black Lagoon is named Ramon, and Frankenstein's monster is Ricky.
Why Ricky? Is there any explanation for that?
Why Ramon?
This is the beginning to a Morse Day in the Time song. Hey, Ricky! Now Ramon!
And the monster forms are Garuru, Basha, and Doga, which makes less sense.
Well, I get Guru, but...
Well, yeah. But...
I guess not everything can be relevant.
Guess not.
Even if it does look good.
Well, whatever.
So Kiva switches to mode green and takes out Sheep Fangire, even though he levels half of the forest in order to do so.
Haha!
Stupid trees.
What good did they ever do anyone?
Or so the trees.
What?
Oshry never even had trees.
Ah. But then what would your mom swing from with her tail?
Castle Doron.
Oh, okay.
Nothing can stop your mom from swinging.
Speaking of Castle Doron, what does it do after the Fangire is defeated?
It eats them.
Well.
Yeah, what?
Apparently eating the spirit form of the Fangire pacifies the castle and stops it from rampaging.
A Fangire's soul can live on after the physical form is destroyed, but if it's consumed by Castle Doron, then it can't regenerate.
Okay. And if the castle
doesn't... What is Castle Doron?
It's the dragon castle.
Well, I know, but what the shit is that?
It's a castle that's a dragon.
Is it a Fangire too, or...
Well, it used to be the property of the Fangire.
It's not really explained, is it?
No.
Okay.
Neither is Castle Doran's little kid that appears for about 5-6 episodes and then is promptly forgotten about.
It's probably just another survivor, like the three, you know, chess players inside it.
The arms monsters.
Right. The full story of Kiva is that there's actually 13 different demon races, but most of them have been wiped out by the Fangires. Jiro and his friends are each the last survivor of their various races, so they've agreed to stay and help out Kiva.
Because Otoya ends up helping them out in his time.
See? It's all connected.
It's all connected when
they take a long f***ing time to explain it all.
It's all connected when they bother to explain it.
I take it they don't do that very often.
Not as much as they need to, probably.
But if you can stick around and wait for the explanations, it's actually a pretty good series.
It's okay. So was that the end of the episode?
No, it ends with Wataru visiting Megumi and playing the violin for her. Finally taking a step to overcome one of his many, 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 many anxieties.
Well, it's a good thing those anxieties don't prevent him from kicking ass.
Well, the only reason he's able to fight as Kiva is because of the sound his father's violin makes when a Fangire appears, which compels him to fight. So without that, he would be just as useless as Kiva as he is as Wataru.
Oh.
So a violin makes you kick ass.
Yes, a violin makes you kiss ass.
Well, that plays a different tune.
It's more of a toot. So Kiva's power-ups are whistle-based?
So are Ix's.
Okay.
And Kivat does the blowing.
Haha! Well, it's a good thing he's at waist level then.
Perfect.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Kiva?
Not bad. A little confusing. There's a lot of characters going on that aren't really explained terribly well, but the show seems to be paced well, and it's got good suit designs and decent action.
And it has Otoya. That's very important. Fort Max, what are you doing?
Do we really want to know the answer to that?
Oh, he's making a lot of noise over there.
I repeat, do we really want to know the answer to that?
Well, he could at least not do it while the microphone is active. And of course, then he doesn't bother to share any thoughts on Kiva.
I didn't watch him.
Fort Max, it seems sometimes like you don't even want to be here.
That's just on Mondays.
Yeah, he's fine with it on Tuesdays. Well, that was Kiva.
And I'll toss out a recommendation for it, even if it does take a while to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably worth watching, I guess.
And even if Spider is f***ing creepy.
I thought that was a point in its favor.
It's favorable and it's a flaw.
Oh. Well, speaking of Kiva, let's take a break and go to the review you gave us this week of, Sochaku Henshin Kiva.
Welcome back to Paladin's Place. I'm not sure what I enjoyed most about Kamen Rider Kiva. The sliding timescale story element, the unique choice of weapons and powers, or maybe just the fact that it's a story with vampire elements where the lead hero is in a sparkly douchebag. Regardless, I knew I wanted a Kiva figure for my collection. Unfortunately, Kiva is the last Heisei-era Kamen Rider not yet included in SH Figure Arts. For now, Kiva fans have to make do with the earlier Sochaku Henshin series. So let's examine their version of the Vampire King.
Wake up!
Unlike the last Sochaku I reviewed, where the plastic figure is essentially a display stand for metal armor, Kiva found a way to utilize both materials to their full advantage. The figure is almost all detailed plastic except for a die-cast vest that covers Kiva's back and shoulders. Generally, mixing die-cast and plastic in action figures does not have good results, but Kiva pulls it off quite well. The die-cast serves to enhance the visual detail, but also manages not to weigh down the figure or prevent articulation in any of the major joints. And make no mistake, Kiva's articulation level is excellent. Every joint that should be mobile is present here. The die-cast bits also extend to Kiva's lower right leg, which can be removed in order to mimic Kamen Rider Kiva's ultimate attack, Darkness Moon Break, the only rider kick in history to punish enemies in the name of the moon. I have only one flaw with this figure, and it's not something that can actually be blamed on the Sochaku series. Normal Kiva's play value is severely limited due to a lack of weaponry. In fact, Kamen Rider Kiva has only one real accessory. Kivat the Third, the impish sidekick who grants Kiva the power to conquer Fangotters.
Kivat Teikuze!
If collectors want something with better armament, Kiva's various weapon forms were also released in this line and would serve as fine alternatives. In all, Sochaku Henshin Kiva features a near-perfect blending of form and function, perfectly capturing this Kamen Rider design while still being fun to play with. Since this was the last year of Sochaku releases, I'm glad to see the line went out on a high note. For better or worse, this figure's quality is probably a big factor in why Kamen Rider Kiva has not made the jump to figure arts yet, instead offering release spots to his evil twin brother and Golden Armor Digivolved form,
Wake Up Kiva!
Which had no regular releases. I'm sure normal Kiva will get released in Figuarts at some point, but for now I'm quite happy with the Sochaku Henshin release. It's fun, it looks great, fits in with the other Rider toys, and it only set me back $20. Pretty hard to beat that. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more Superhero Time!
You're listening to Superhero Time!
Have y'all seen the SIC wing form Dino yet?
No.
Probably. It looks amazing. Here, let me post a link.
Okay, I was just going to go search for it.
I'm not paying that much for it, but goddamn, it's pretty.
Okay, that is kind of cool. The clockwork wings look out of place, but obviously that's the coolest part of it.
Yeah. Advent indeed.
Yeah, he belonged in Ryuki more than Deno. Because Advent this, Advent that.
Yeah.
Now that's a climax from start to finish.
What, wing form?
Yes. This wing form, anyway.
Yeah. Boy, that is expensive, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a lot more than most SICs, isn't it?
Well, it's special magazine and figure.
Yeah.
So apparently this is some kind of a thing.
A thing.
Yeah. I never really think of that until after I say the word the first time.
And then it occurs to you.
Yeah. Naturally too late.
It's always too late.
Of course.
It's too late to turn back now.
It's too late for apologies.
Never too late. That man was a feeling creature.
It's about 2 years too late for apologies.
I never did want to live forever.
Here was SIC Dian too.
Dian.
You mean Dian?
Whatever. Dian is better.
Well, it's supposed to look like die, but it's pronounced like it would be the end.
D Bart D is German.
What?
No one who speaks Such German could be an evil man.
So what do we have left to do for the show? Just wrap up, or?
Well, we're already back in the show, technically.
Oh.
I just wasn't going to tell you because it's more fun that way.
Oh. I'm backing your mom.
Yeah.
She died.
So I guess for next week, we'll swing back around and do Let's Go Kamen Rider.
I guess that's fair.
Did they ever put out a version that was not HD?
No, but I'm going to handle that this week.
Thank you.
They didn't even... There isn't a version that's HD. I mean, it's DVD.
Yeah, so but it's still soft.
I can't stream MKVs, so...
Right.
Well, MKV doesn't mean it's HD.
The point I'm making is, as it exists now, I can't stream it to the TV.
Yeah, I'm going to make the hard sub version, because I need that to post a power playback with anyway.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's just a matter of being able to upload it without my connection resetting in the middle. So good luck with that.
Which will fail many times.
Well, just send it to me and I'll upload it for you.
It'd probably be faster, even considering the 2 days it would take the mail to get there. I'll just mail it to Fort Max, because he's always bragging about his 2 megabytes per second upload speed. So I'm pretty sure Mickey's is still faster.
Probably.
Yeah, I think 40
I don't
megab-
know about to brag, though.
I think 40 megabit is better than 2 megabyte. Although, off the top of my head, I can't see how much better it is. Fort Max, you're a huge geek. Why don't you tell us?
A byte is 8 bits.
How many is that for a dollar, though?
3 for $1.
I'd buy that for $1.
But no, what does 40 megabits work out to in megabyte terms?
Well, let's see. The other way around is easier. 2 megabytes is 16 megabits.
Okay, then Mickey's is much, much faster than yours. Mickey's got like 5 megabytes upload per second. Wouldn't that be right? 40 divided by 8?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not bothering.
Yeah.
Well, Mickey, the point is you're still better than Fort Max.
I'm drunker, too.
And we have that in, like, you know, numerical terms to quantify it now.
It's fact.
You are, like, 2.5 times better than Fort Max. Or is he 1.5 times better?
I don't know. How much better am I than you?
Math is hard.
You're supposed to say tee-hee after that.
It doesn't work with my voice.
Plus, the problem with determining how much better you are than XV is you also have to account for how the cow's doing at the time.
Yeah. Well, in general, though, my upload rate is 384 kilobits per second.
Well, that's fantastic compared to an AOL connection from 1993.
Yeah. Yeah, 2400 baud.
Back in the days when CompuServe was, you know, text only.
Back in the days of that modem I found at Goodwill. Remember with the Prodigy?
Yeah.
Oh, Goodwill.
I used to have a computer with a 2 gigabyte hard drive. How was I ever going to fill that up?
Oh, well, the first computer my family...
Same way you fill his mother?
The first computer my family bought had a 120 megabyte hard drive.
Man, that's a lot. I'll never fill that.
I know, that's like almost 90 floppy disks.
Can you imagine how much 90 floppy disks it would contain?
Why, that would be almost 120 megabytes. Well, and then there's the Sony Mavica digital camera we had that wrote to floppy disks.
My parents had one of those.
Yeah.
How much video could it put on one of... I mean, how long would it be able to record?
About 5 minutes.
Take video.
Yeah, it did.
It took pictures. Mine just took pictures, so...
Well, I guess we had a nicer one. No, it took video at horrendously low resolution for about 5 minutes at a time.
It's about the same as a Razer phone?
Oh, probably not that good.
Yeah.
Like, my cell phone now takes video at, like, 154 by 220 pixels or something. I think that's a little bit better than that digital camera had.
That's better than VHS.
Everything's better than VHS.
No, VHS is like 320 by 240.
Well, I like the VHS copies better because they don't cut off the top and bottom of the screen like them DVDs do.
No, what I need is a video recorder that's better than beta.
I don't think anything's better than beta, is it?
Alpha?
Well, maybe like Super 8 or something? I don't know.
Heck if I know. I'm too young to know about beta. But I do know 8 tracks.
All I know one. The one from Transformers.
Well, that sure was a show, wasn't it?
Yeah, sort of. A few probably.
It wasn't until I came back from break.
A few shows, actually.
If you could cut that text speak out, you could have another show to send in alongside the Star Trek one.
Yeah.
No, I think that's okay.
Should we make the official announcement that this is podcast month or whatever? Since we're leading off the charge. But we're in first place, though, so we should, you know, show up that we're taking the lead.
Yeah, but this
what
is all
a great start it is.
Yeah. Yes, the first podcast out in National Podcast Month or whatever the hell it is. What is it? National Podcast Post Month, apparently.
And podcast Awareness Month.
And we're it.
I weep for the rest of the month.
Future, it's us.
That's just so terrible.
Yeah. Say, I mean, from another terrible podcast from us.
Say what?
Am I breaking up again?
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
Oh. There, you fix yourself?
No, I'm not bothering.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's National Post a Podcast Month or something, and apparently we're going to post a podcast a day every day for the month of November. And Superhero Time's the first one up at bat.
This cannot end well.
So we completely understand if you don't ever come back to us again.
Yeah, sorry, Kilby, we kind of ruined your plans.
But watch near the end of the month, we're planning to do a Black Friday podcast, which should have lots of great stories. It's the only thing that we've got planned for this month that I'm actually interested in at all.
You're not interested in the alternate RFC?
No. No, I'm not.
After Dark?
Yeah, I still don't really see how that's going to work without Hasselhoff.
We just got to talk about Transformer news like this.
Because it's quiet because everybody's asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's breathier.
I don't know about breathier, but it's kind of, you know, creepier.
There's a fine line.
But no, I love retail horror stories, so also retail horror stories.
Garo fights them.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that'll be our show for this week. Let's go Kamen Rider next week and whatever. I don't know. Something will come up, I'm sure. Somehow we always get a two-hour show.
Or longer.
At least a two-hour show.
I blame Ken.
Sometimes it's longer.
This time do we blame the Segway or the cliffs?
This has been Superhero Time. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Superhero Time is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.
The show was a lot shorter before we had Ken on. I think it's his fault. For like actually
hitching caught fire and your Skype insisted on reinstalling itself.
Well, that, but I'm just saying, you know, Ken actually has things to say on the show. So he's dragging us down. We should have got somebody
we
who would
be dragged down any further.
Well, we should have got somebody who would just sit here and
wait, didn't we finish?
I have no idea anymore. But my point was going to be that instead of getting somebody who actually had things to talk about, we should have found somebody else who would just sit there silently for minutes at a time, like Paladin and Fort Max. Yeah, see, just like that.
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Super Hero Time!